play a little bit. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. We're at the Alabama State House. Still to come on the program, State Representative David Faulkner, State Representative Steve Klaus, and Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth. So stay tuned for that. But joining us now, friend of the program, always comes on when we invite him. Especially if I'm ever filling into Montgomery, I go on my way to get him on. But State Senator Will Barfoot from Pike Road joins us here on the program. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I've got a feeling that a lot of folks listen to the show not because of the guests, right, but because of the music.
Yeah, that's what I'm told. We haven't freshened it up in a while, but every now and then I like to add a few new ones. You got a new wrinkle.
Keep it the same. They work.
We don't have like an oldies sort of country station in Mobile. We have, y'all got like a couple here. Yep. The one I listen to in the Wiregrass, and then, you know, they're all kind of spread around the state, but, this is where they come for the, yep, for the nostalgia, I suppose.
Good stuff.
Hey, well, how's the session going? You're becoming like an elder statesman now. So, we're halfway through this second session for you. I mean, second quadrennium for you. How you feeling?
Yeah, pretty good. New pro tem. So a little bit of a change in the way things are done. Not that the old ways were bad, but certainly sometimes it's good to kind of get a fresh start. And so we've had some pretty conservative bills that we've passed in the past, even this quadrennium, but pro tem's doing a great job of leading us. And you saw on the floor yesterday there were several bills that I sponsored. And of course, after tomorrow we'll be a third of the way through. So that's
a little misleading, though, right? You got some spring breaks, and you got, and the first 2 weeks were the 3 day weeks, so you burned a couple of days.
Sometimes it helps to fool yourself, though, mentally, right? I use the first half of the session. You get through 2 days, that means you're 15th of the way through. 5 days means that you're 6th of the way through.
That's the way it's like a prison sentence or something.
Yes. Sometimes it feels like that. But when you reach the halfway mark, there's diminishing returns in using the percentages. So then you start counting down of how many days you have left. It is like a prison sentence in some cases.
Last few weeks, man, everybody just looks wiped out. You see it. The clothes aren't freshly starched anymore. You got bags under your eyes. In particular, you look at somebody's budget chairman that time of year, they really, really, you can just tell it just wears you down.
Yes.
And then you talk to the guys in the hallways, the lobbyists, and they're the same way. They're just, for a lot of those guys, it's just about keeping bills from passing, not trying to promote new bills, for just kind of protecting their turf. And that's it is like that game, though. It's like, how many more days do we have until this is finally over?
Yep. And generally speaking, I think the taxpayers, that's an advantage for the taxpayers when we're not in session. That's what I said before I was elected, and to some extent I believe that still. So,
well, I would say this, though. 2020, when there was no COVID session, there's like a few days at the beginning and then the very last day, and you got the executive amendment and the budget's done. But, like, for a while there, it just seemed like there wasn't, there was a void there that we needed legislative input. It just felt like the executive branch was a little top-heavy at the time, and nothing was ever, that bothered me. And then everything kind of got back to normal after that.
Yeah, Senator, well, before I was here, never served with him, and I won't mention his name, but I understood he took the position that what we should do is before we pass a new law, we ought to delete an old one.
Well,
and probably some wise advice.
Well, let's get into some particulars here. The Glock switch bill yesterday, you got that done. Kind of walk us through that. As I tell you off air, anytime there is something to do with guns, you're going to get a pushback from certain constituencies. But this seemed to be one that everybody kind of went along with.
Yeah, and rightfully so. Listen, I'm a Second Amendment advocate, gun owner, and think that it's wise to have a watchful eye on any legislation dealing or that could deal or be perceived as restricting gun ownership. This bill certainly does not do that. The Glock switch bill, as it's commonly called, the machine gun conversion bill, as it's titled, I believe, in the piece of legislation, Already under federal law, these conversion devices that are meant to take a legal, perfectly legal, which I have many, semi-automatic pistols, and with a couple dollar conversion kit, make them fully automatic, is already against federal law. And so we mirrored in some respects what the federal law is.
Right.
We actually didn't go as far as I think federal law already goes. Why was that important to pass that bill? Why did that legislation come up? There's many instances where local law enforcement, police officers or sheriffs come in contact with individuals who have these conversion devices on pistols. Again, it's already against federal law, but they don't have the statutory ability to arrest them on a federal law unless they are part of a task force, a federal task force. And a lot of times you'll see those individuals who might be released, committed maybe some other act that they're held for, but sometimes even released, and the federal prosecutors might not even be able to pick that up. So this just gives the state of Alabama, by way of local law enforcement, the ability to arrest those folks who are in possession of that conversion, machine gun conversion device that, as I said before, is already illegal under federal law. It's important to know that, a lot of work went into it. We made sure that the binary triggers were not included in there. They're not illegal under state law and remain, citizens remain have the ability to keep those and have those. So we specifically did not ban those, and that was an important part of the Second Amendment protection piece.
Well, let's talk about this, though. If you're in possession of them, there's penalties now on the state level. What about the people who make these things, the manufacturers? Like, where are they coming from? Why aren't we ever talking about, like, going after the distributors? So sort of like we do when we crack down on drug trafficking or whatever, Glock switch trafficking. Yeah. Like, to me, like, I get it. Like, there should be a penalty or whatever for these things. If they're illegal, they're illegal. But where are they coming from? Like, why aren't we spending time on that?
Yeah, I don't think you'll see. I don't think you see any manufacturers in the United States as a whole having those. There are legal provisions in there where somebody could own that, right? A law enforcement.
Are they just manufacturing with their 3D printer? Or?
Some of that's happening. I suspect some of that's also coming from the border through Mexico, foreign nations manufacturing those devices and shipping them across. I mean, you certainly see this in gang activity where they have those conversion devices on these semi-automatic pistols, make them fully automatic. So to your point, though, about the manufacturer of those, I mean, again, state of Alabama has a pretty long arm, but not as long of an arm as the federal courts, law enforcement does, and we could not prosecute those individuals over in China for manufacturing those. So I don't know what the federal law is, whether or not it extends to those manufacturers.
So we think they're coming from China.
Well, I would say that a lot of the bad things that are happening here, whether it be fentanyl or conversion, machine gun conversion devices, probably are made in or exported from China and reach the United States by way of the southern border.
That's quite the black market there, right?
So it's, yeah. I mean, if you're sitting over in China and you want to make some money, fentanyl factory or, one of these machine gun conversion devices it's a pretty lucrative market, I think.
Joined by State Senator Will Barfoot here on the program. He's chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Senator, the more bigger picture here, the goal is got a crime situation and trying to get a handle on it and not trying to maybe chip away at it without having to take some extraordinary big picture thing like a takeover of a municipal police department, right? How much do you think this is really going to change that discussion, a Glock switch bill or anything else you're trying?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure that, I mean, there is no silver bullet, pardon the pun. And I said this in committee and I'm not sure if I said it on the floor, but I do believe that, it's not guns that are a problem. It's not the conversion devices that are the problem. It's people, bad people who have them. How do you attack that? There's a Senate bill, 118, which is a Nye's law. It was a constitutional amendment that we passed on the floor yesterday. And then even within Senate Bill 119, which we briefly talked about but got carried over yesterday, heightened penalties for someone who would discharge a firearm, shoot into an occupied building or a vehicle. I think certainly you've got to make the punishment stronger when individuals commit terrible acts, and we've tried to do that within Senate Bill 118, again, a refresh of an eyes law to add in some extra crimes where the courts can hear evidence and juggle whether or not that individual may be too much of a threat to society to let them out on a bond.
Well, let's move on. The Nye's Law and expanding that. Now, we're familiar with it. Chip Brown from Hollinger's Islands, yep, in our market here. What needs to be done there? What needs to be approved upon?
Yeah, so you're right. Kudos to Representative Chip Brown here a couple of years ago, had that bill. Senator Sessions actually carried it in the Senate a couple of years ago, and because it was a constitutional amendment, the people of the state of Alabama had to vote on it and voted overwhelmingly in favor of that. For your listeners who might not be fully aware that the constitutional amendment, before that legislation was passed and approved by the citizens of the state of Alabama, the only crime for which someone could be held without bail was a capital murder offense. The initial constitutional amendment expanded that to include murder, rape first, robbery first, several other crimes. Since that was passed, I think 2 years or 3 years ago, there's been folks in law enforcement, the DA's office around the state have said, hey, we may need to think about adding in some particular crimes on that that could be considered by the courts upon hearing the evidence of not granting bail to someone. So what that Nye's Law did, the constitutional amendment that we passed out of the Senate yesterday, was it included any solicitation or conspiracy or attempted murder. So those three categories of murder, and it also included discharging a firearm into an occupied building or vehicle. Those things now can be considered if it gets through the House and if the citizens of the state vote to approve that. Those could be considered by the court once somebody's arrested as to whether or not they're severe danger to the citizens of the state of Alabama and then have an opportunity to hear that evidence and make a decision about whether or not they were going to be afforded bond.
Well, overall, we're making strides here. I mean, you know, summer months, we tend to have more of these discussions about crime being out of control in the big cities in Alabama. And that, you know, once somebody's getting shot on Atlanta Highway and it paralyzes them, it seems like, well, they got an out of control situation up there in Montgomery. Do you anticipate that we'll have a different discussion this summer? I mean, do you think these things are really gonna like make a difference and put people at ease, or is this just sort of the ebb and flow of how life is?
Yeah, I'd say big question. Will we see a noticeable difference? I hope so. And do I believe that the crime rate will go down to zero? No. I mean, murder's already against the law, right? And we have an inordinate amount, especially the metropolitan areas around the state. I think the one thing that the governor's tried to focus on, and I think you'll see, is there's a back the blue bill, as it's been called. You know, you may know this, but my daddy retired as a Montgomery police officer, had another uncle that was a policeman in Montgomery and two uncles that were state troopers. It was for ALEA, you know, the acronym of ALEA was formed. The problem I think we have in law enforcement is that too many times those members are getting beat up. I mean, you know, for 150 years or as long as there's been law enforcement, they wake up every day, put on a badge, and they may not come home. That's not changed, right? That's been heightened, but that hasn't changed.
It's the politics or the perception, right?
That's right. But then you've got added in the last several years, you've got, you know, social media where individuals
are videotaping.
Yeah. I mean, you know, just police officers or law enforcement officers in general, I mean, they're not only subject to, you know, being hurt, killed. Now they're subject to being, you know, denigrated on social media, beat up in the press. Oh, and by the way, and sometimes when they're doing their job, prosecuted for doing their job. And so I think, you know, all of that combines to say, you know, you've got police departments out there that are maybe only half force of what they really need to be or what's budgeted. And that budget number may not even be high enough. So you've got a lack of individuals getting into law enforcement because of the lack of respect and potential for being prosecuted. And I think until we change that narrative, until we say, you know what, we're going to have law enforcement officers and we're going to back them up. We're going to have somebody in charge at that local area, whether it's a police chief or even higher than that, a mayor who says we're going to support our law enforcement and we're hiring you to get a job done. Don't violate the constitutional rights of others, but get out there and get the job done.
Well, I mean, there's just a we have Shane Stringer on. He's now police chief in Mobile County. It's just there was like a morale problem. That there was like a social engineering, or everybody's called it woke. I don't know how far it went. I'm not sure, but there was a morale problem, and the numbers diminished. But that's sort of just a product of like the policy implemented by the local mayor or whatever. Is there really like a state response to that?
Yeah, no, you're right. That is by and large, as I said, and I've said this, I think, on your show before, you could hire as a police chief a General George Patton type, right? But if that individual's hands are tied, and by tied, I mean the local, the mayor of whatever municipality it may be, then you really don't have somebody who has the backing of that individual, and they can't accomplish their job. So, I mean, it is on the local folks at the local level and local elections to make sure that those elected officials are supportive of law enforcement.
And look, it goes both ways. Like, we heard about the Hansville situation, and this Lee County situation is kind of coming along. You know, you do have sort of precarious situations that go the other way where law enforcement's abusing their role. Sure. So, I mean, that can't help the cause at all, can it?
No, you're 100% correct. And, I believe in personal responsibility. I don't like the term immunity. And so, yes, there is a balancing act there. Listen, those law enforcement members should be respected. They've got a job to do. Let's let them do their job. At the same time, right, we do have a set of laws in the state of Alabama and in the United States that they have to abide by. And we should hold everyone accountable, including law enforcement folks. It just depends on where that line is, right? How are we going to support them to do their job within the confines of the law?
Senator, you're a gentleman for coming on. Thanks for stopping by, and hopefully we'll talk again in the future.
And Stan, thank you very much for having me.
State Senator Will Barfoot there. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
He said something.